Good day. This is the making of the John Batzler Show. I welcome you to the headlines in Europe. U.S. and Iran sign deal as President Trump vows to release frozen funds and ease sanctions. Subhead, this is London. President says Iranians will receive incentives when they, quote, behave, end quote. And he acknowledges Tehran will keep ballistic missiles. There's more to it, but that's the headline that's dominating the story. There's also a video of the president at dinner, I believe, in Paris, signing a document. I can't say what that document is because we're also told there'll be a signing of a document electronically or physically in Switzerland in these next hours, in which the U.S. will attend with other actors in the drama. Pakistan is mentioned, Qatar is mentioned, and certainly Tehran is mentioned. However, because there is the fog of diplomacy, I welcome my colleague and friend Lance Gatling. He is in Tokyo, a principal in Nexial Research, looking at what is going on in Europe from the point of view of our very important ally, Japan. Tokyo hasn't got time for fog. It needs to make decisions right away for its economy, given that the shutdown in the Strait of Hormuz profoundly affected Tokyo's options. Coming on top of the year of the tariff turmoil, which is coming back, Japan is getting used to emergencies. Lance, a very good day to you. We're going to be recording in just a minute, but I wanted to greet you in the capital of uncertainty. The mood in Tokyo during the tariffs, now replaced by the Strait of Hormuz crisis, is it holding up? These are sturdy people. They've been through bad times for the last 100 years. Do you see the same? Good day to you, Lance.
Good morning, John. I believe they're very optimistic about the recent development. Certainly, they have a good degree of not skepticism, but reticence to get too overboard about it. They did sign up with a statement that applauded the move towards a negotiated ceasefire and a movement to open the Straits of Hormuz. That's foremost in the Japanese mind. They got, in 2024, they got about 95% of their oil through the Straits of Hormuz. They have diversified energy resources, particularly to get liquid natural gas from Southeast Asia. But suddenly they were faced with a cutoff of that oil. They have a 300-day strategic petroleum reserve, which they tapped, and then they subsidized gas retail prices so it stays low, relatively low by Japanese standards. But they have increased their purchase of U.S. crude by 800%, which is from a fairly low level. And then from other sources, they're getting about a quarter of their requirements from other sources. And they see that as a victory. They've been able to manage this fairly well. There's an impact in the consumer economy, not so much with gas, but their finished products, I understand, are from anecdotally, not with data, but that certain finished high-end petroleum for high-performance engines and things like that is at a premium right now.
Lance, I want to make it very clear that I'm going to Tokyo because you represent the Asian dependence on Middle Eastern oil. And this crisis has affected profoundly options, present options, as you just illustrated, but future planning, or does it? Are the governments responding, saying we need to put a plan in place that for the long term, not just on the basis of the present headlines, but we have to concern ourselves with how this could happen again or even get worse?
Well, perhaps coincidentally to the crisis in the Gulf, Japan just promulgated its 7th energy plan. And this one is pretty expansive in its changes and the desire to change the energy market in Japan. Remember that before Fukushima, Japan produce about 30% of its domestic electricity from nuclear power plants. That went essentially to zero after Fukushima. They fired up a bunch of coal, literally fired up coal-fired powered plants, brought them out of long-term storage, brought them online, and then beefed up their imports of LNG and others. So they're back. They went down as low as, say, 3 to 6% atomic energy. It's poking back up towards 10%. They have 55 reactors. They're going to decommission a number of those, and some of those are timing out. Some of those were taken offline. It's just not sensical to bring them back online for a short period of time because they have a 40-year cap on their longevity. But I understand they just signed a contract with Rolls-Royce Energy to buy small modular reactors. They plan to bring their nuclear energy portion of domestic energy back up to about 20%, and then 40 to 50% in renewables, which everybody understands is very aggressive, let's say.
Aggressive and ambitious and utopian. Yes, that's the sort of ideas I welcome, Lance. You and I know that I will not get to see the balance of this century. So utopian looks to me pretty attractive right now.
Well, John, don't cut yourself short. I just read that Ray Kurzweil believes if we can last to 2032, essentially we're going to last forever. The medical breakthroughs are going. Okay. I just had four of my judo students testing today, and the youngest was 28, the oldest was 78. So let's don't cut ourselves short yet.
Okay.
But certainly, it is very aggressive. They're bringing this to medium and large enterprises, forcing them to continue with carbon capture plans and offsets, carbon and marketing carbon offsets, but also requiring companies to put solar panels on their rooftops. There's been quite a pushback of people around the country, a country that doesn't have a lot of arable land, flat land where it's suitable for farming. And all of a sudden, a whole lot of solar panels showed up because they were heavily subsidized. There's some pushback on that. So we'll see how this works.
Let us begin with the formal John Batchelor show. I will begin with the crude oil import price hitting a record high. Reflecting on the uncertainty in the Gulf, which now begins to look more regular, but not yet, which is why I'm not starting there. I'm starting in Tokyo. And I propose to you that we spend the first half talking about what this has done to the economy and how it's adjusting. The yen, for example, the Bank of Japan, taxes. And then look to the future for the second half, especially the renewables. My measure of Japan, having only been there a week, but I enjoyed it a great deal, as you know, is that this is a nation of can-do engineers dealing with what you'd have to say a beautiful land that is short of critical resources, and yet it's manufactured itself into a gem in the Pacific. And so if there's going to be leadership, it's going to be the makers of Toyota. Here we go. Five. Thank you, Lance. Five. Four. This is the making of the John Batchelor Show, about to become the thing itself. Five, four, three, two, one. I'm John Batchelor. I go to Tokyo. My good colleague Lance Gatling, a principal in Nexial Research, and we're looking at what the Strait of Hormuz crisis over these last 100-plus days means to Japan, to Tokyo's economy, to the whole of East Asia, integrated with the Japanese successes over these decades. I read the headline in Reuters. Japan's crude oil import price hit a record high in yen terms in May, surpassing April levels. This is the Ministry of Finance. The customs declared import price rose to, and then a huge yen number, 114,000, the highest since comparable records began in 1979. Lance, a very good day to you. We don't need numbers to know that the Strait of Hormuz was a crisis for everyone, but especially Asia, depending upon imports from the Gulf. What has been the effect on the Japanese people and their ability to maintain that beautiful and extremely productive culture, especially gas lines? Have you seen anything like that? Good day to you, Lance.
Good morning, John. I haven't seen any gas lines. I understand that some of the high-end oil products, like special motor oil for high-performance engines, is at a premium. There are supposedly some shortages there. I haven't seen it personally. I haven't noticed any gas lines at all. There are not a whole lot of gas stations in downtown Tokyo, surprisingly small number, but you don't see anybody queued up for anything. There's no rationing. The Japanese government cracked open its strategic petroleum reserve, which was one of the world's largest, probably per capita, the world's largest. And it still has 200-something days left after tapping it for some weeks now, over a month. And they're also subsidizing the retail price of gasoline to keep it down to Japanese terms, a relatively moderate level. I think what we're looking at for May is the fact that heretofore the Japanese, say 2024, the Japanese got over 95% of their oil from the Persian Gulf. Now, this was not from Iran. They had complied with the boycotts and the sanctions against the regime in Iran. So they had shut down their exploration and their purchases of Iranian oil. So they buy from other countries in the Gulf, and they're very careful to keep equitable relations with all comers as far as they can. But they certainly focus on maritime security and freedom of navigation through the Straits of Hormuz. That's first and foremost in their mind. But they were able to cover about 25% of their normal imports from other sources. Now, those sources, of course, if they're going in and bidding on the spot market, this wasn't necessarily oil, that long-term oil. They were buying short-term priced oil. So it was pretty expensive. And also, Japan's a pretty far piece from just about everybody on the planet that produces a lot of oil. It's kind of the end of the road. But also, their purchases from the United States went up 800% from a pretty low base, because their domestic petroleum industry is based on Middle East medium to heavy crude instead of sweet light oil from the United States. So there's a significant and costly retooling of the chemical processes in order to optimize the use of that different oil. And of course, they don't want to do that. The anticipation is that they're going to be able to go back to their original sources and have things back on an even keel pretty quickly. But they just promulgated their seventh national energy policy, which has a very ambitious, some have other terms for it, goal of 40 to 50% from renewables by the mid-2030s. But they also bring back atomic power, a nuclear power generation in Japan, which, of course, went to zero after Fukushima. They're now bringing it back up. It's close to 10%. They want to bring that up to 20%. But it's going to be with that additional percentage, I believe, is going to be new builds. They have 55 reactors they can bring back. Of them, they can bring 33 back online. They have 15, I think it is now, up and running, and they'll bring another 18 on. These things take time. They prepared well. They're not panicked, but they sure would like a quicker resolution than later.
Let's talk about the yen, because what you have is imports going up because of a weak yen. Dollar hits one-year high on Fed hike bets. Japan warns on yen. Warns how? What is the concern, and what can be done?
The yen-dollar exchange has seen the yen cheapen to less than 160 yen to the dollar. To put that in perspective, when I first came to Japan 40 years ago, It went from 360, 320, quickly through 180, 160 just in the first year. So this has been a very, very long time since it's been that inexpensive. It's a two-edged sword, of course. Japanese exporters, and before this started, we were discussing the automotive industry. Japanese exporters like Toyota, Honda, selling complete vehicles plus various modules and parts that go into cars, aircraft, things like that, are enjoying a boom. Their raw material costs are up, but they're able to price. They are the suppliers, some of the best suppliers on the planet for this sort of thing, and they're doing quite well. The other side is that consumer demand has dropped, and that's quite concerning to the Japanese, as they've had some years of stagnation in salaries, and they want to bring the salaries up to match the inflation that has come along. So they're kind of caught in a squeeze right now. There is discussion of reducing the 10% per show. He's the it's not a consumption tax, but it might as well be from our standpoint. It's close to a consumption tax of 10%, reducing that to 1% of a period of time. And of course, some people are asking, why not make it zero for the same period? And there's some mechanism that they want to keep up and running, the reporting and the recording of all of that. So it is a mixed bag, but the Japanese stock market, the Nikkei, the Japanese Nihon Keizai, it's like the Japanese Wall Street Journal, if you would, a premier business newspaper and news organization. Their index has hit an all-time high, 77,000, unthinkable several years ago.
Yes, I note the Bank of Japan has raised its rate to a high of 31 years. So there is confidence that there is growth. I want to make sure, though, that I didn't hear you reporting panic. I heard no panic whatsoever. Is that correct? And no sector of the economy.
I don't believe that to be the case. The news doesn't reflect panic. Certainly, there was great concern. As I say, they've spent a tremendous amount of effort to diversify energy from Middle Eastern oil. Even though they still got a lot of their oil from the Middle East, they had other sources of energy, and they were able to exercise it because they maintained good relations with various other countries, including the United States. They were able to increase from a pretty low level, but increase it by 6 to 8-fold.
I'm speaking with Lance Gatling. He is in Tokyo. He's a principal of Nexial Research, and we've been talking about the present. We're going to turn to something that I enjoy a great deal, the future. It involves the Japan profoundly, not only because of energy, but also because of the magic of AI. I'm John Batchelor. I'm John Batchelor with my good colleague Lance Gatling. He is in Tokyo. And I look to Lance to report on where Japan is now in the uncertainty of the Strait of Hormuz crisis. Is the Strait of Hormuz open? Does it remain open? Are we looking at a long time period of uncertainty about Iran's ability to intervene in the world energy needs? At the same time, Japan looks to the future. And Lance, nuclear energy, renewable energy, and AI, all together, they describe a world that is not yet here, but we can begin to see it. So first about nuclear energy. The catastrophe of more than a decade ago has left Japan hesitant about nuclear energy, or has it? Has there been a change of weather about nuclear energy for the future?
The Fukushima incident was certainly a blow to the nuclear power industry here, which heretofore had been very, very safe, incredibly safe. Some of the best equipment in the world, very well maintained, essentially operated perfectly with some minor incidents. Certainly, there were problems with the longevity. The Japanese have capped the operational life of their reactors to 40 years. So when they took 55 reactors offline and only let them back online after close scrutiny, they decided to leave some that were close to retirement. They're not going to restart them. So they have 33 they can restart. I think it's 15 that are up and running now. They're going to bring another 18 online. So it's less than just less than 10% of their power generation now is nuclear. They want to bring that up to 20%. Before Fukushima, it was about 30%. I think that their seventh plan aside, the seventh plan designates a goal of 20% nuclear by the mid-2030s. And 40 to 50% renewable energy, as we discussed, which is a pretty stunning number. But they're going to do that with a range of mechanisms, including mandating solar panels on the rooftops of medium to large enterprises. And those plans start now. They're continuing to expect that there's going to be a requirement to carbon capture and trading under the Japanese system. So we'll see that. Certainly 160 yen of the dollar makes the oil expensive. Plus, if you imagine that there are hundreds of ships bottled up in the Persian Gulf, the Japanese have a number of those ships, own them outright, or they're Japanese flagged. And some of them actually have Japanese crews on board. So finding some oil in the spot market, buying that, making arrangements to bring in Japan is not a cheap way to do it. It's not planned. It's not long term. It's happening with at 160 yen of the dollar, and the dollar still dominates oil purchases. So certainly they feel it. They know it. But it's not a matter of panic. It's a matter of management, and how they keep that going is always going to be interesting to see. But I think they had prepared well, and they've reacted well.
Just a minute, Lance. I got problems here. Just a pause. I'll be right back to you. We're going to go to AI. Just a moment.
Okay.
Oh, okay. I'm here, Lance. I just have to deal with, you know, I'm at home, so I have to deal with contractors and what, and barking dogs.
Okay.
We're going to go to AI. Here we go. We have 4 minutes, 4.5 minutes left. Good timing. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Lance, artificial intelligence dominates the conversation in the U.S. markets. And the build-out of data centers is everything about copper and iron and steel. It's dominating the story in the markets, has for a year. I see that Japan is in a very good position for chip making, and that means AI is integral to its future as well. What are the expectations? How do they talk? Is it magic for them? Is it engineering contracts? What is their vision of AI?
It is certainly something that the Japanese are very aware of. The commercial companies have not pursued cutting edge AI. There is experimentation. The government wants to spend money feeding universities and some laboratories to do more. They always talk about it. Pretty quietly, the Japanese carved out distinct links in the chain for semiconductors. You cannot make a cutting-edge semiconductor anywhere on the planet without Japanese participation at some level. Companies like Tokyo Electron and any number of other companies, all the way through final production testing, assembly and testing. There was a spin-out from Toshiba Corporation a few years ago. They had lost money for many, many years. and they spun it out, and they thought that certainly someone's going to buy this thing and break it up because they can't make any money. It now, because of the AI boom, they're involved in some memory that is required for cutting edge AI. The spin out, the semiconductor spin out of Toshiba is worth more than the parent company Toshiba, which is a pretty astonishing turn if you've seen the history of this business unit. So within AI, they certainly enjoy positions, not at the at the leading edge of AI itself, but in the hardware, the manufacturing processes. And I anticipate that the Koreans and the Japanese are going to work together to reshore a significant portion of the key strategic manufacturing base in Taiwan, because the reality is if the United States built any number of those facilities today, they couldn't staff it.
I'm looking at reporting that indicates that this is industry-wide. Industry is benefiting from strong chip demand, led gains in the manufacturer's confidence, with the index for the chemicals sector rising to plus 20 from plus 6. The quote from a manager at a chemical company, which isn't what you first think of AI. Despite geopolitical tensions, demand remains robust, especially in semiconductor-related sectors. So we're looking at Japan being in the baseball term, sweet spot of AI in all directions, hardware, software. What about data centers? Are they looking for land for data centers? Is it a scramble?
Well, they do have any number of data centers, and certainly Japanese businesses are that. I think they're very circumspect in how much authority they're going to invest in that.
One minute left, Lance. Go ahead.
IT developments in Japan have been problematic for the Japanese at some point. So they have integrated overseas capacity with subsidiaries in places like India, even China, contributing coding for Japanese companies. It is an issue. They do bring in top talent. But I'm not sure they're ready to give everything over to AI just yet.
Lance Gatling, a principal at Nexial Research in Tokyo. And my measure of Japan is if there is to be a leadership in the 21st century, I'd look to Tokyo. I'm John Batchelor. Okay, we got it done despite the interruption. Forgive me, Lance.
That's quite all right. It's your day. It's my evening. I had to scramble to get back here, but hopefully I won't get any interruptions from the doorbell tonight.
I am very, very impressed that Japan has weathered this so evenly.
It is a great tribute to a lot of people working very hard to do it. In the absence of Fukushima, the incident in Fukushima, Japan would be in tremendous shape. From the disaster at Fukushima, I predicted even then that they're eventually going to just dump all of the contaminated water into the Pacific. They should have never tried to hold it all. That's what the argument is now, is what do they do with the water that's contaminated with radioisotopes? But they're harmless to humans. They pass through seafood. The Chinese hold it over them. But in the absence of that, they would have been in very, very good condition, a very good position vis-a-vis this crisis. I think that's unfortunate. But even if with the atomic generation capability down as far as it is, they've still done quite well. And now there are some specialty chemicals that that the Japanese have involved, things that you normally don't think about. And they do go into those chemicals to make certain processes possible in making advanced semiconductors. And that's very bothersome.
My measure of AI is that it is extremely unclear what we're building and how fast we're building it. It's where we're headed. But it could be worse, to use an analogy for the automobile. Everybody had a barn. Everybody was building trucks somewhere between 1900 and 1910. And a few emerged as winners because they were well-financed. And then they started to consolidate. We're still in the build a truck in your barn and sell it age of AI. And
unfortunately, the barns cost $10 to $20 billion a piece.
Yep,
it's pretty astonishing. My general impression is that we're going to see most people realize that good enough is good enough. They don't need cutting edge AI. They don't need an ocean of data. A friend of mine involved in the business says we create ponds of data for our customers, and it's their pond. They fish in their pond. They know what they want, and they've stocked the pond with what they believe they need. You know, the notion that I need $5 billion worth of large language model to do what I do is simply laughable.
Sure.
The average consumer, are they going to care if it's nearly free Chinese AI agent that they're using? What are they going to hide from them? You know, our government takes notes on what we do. The Chinese take notes on what we do. What are they going to do? You know, cancel my subscription to National Geographic? I'm not sure that we can be hurt that way. You just have to be very judicious in what hits any electronic medium.
I agree with that. I use it every day. I'm not worried about security. I noted this morning, Senator Sanders, who's a very clever person, comes forward with a full plan to, I love this, nationalize AI companies. Isn't that wonderful?
Well, he understands his audience. Politicians gonna politic.
I know, but yeah. I just love the idea of seizing assets.
As you do. I find it less appealing.
Well, it's sort of putting a lion in the Colosseum and seeing, you know, what gladiator can take him on. All right, bring forward the lion. I also like the idea that AI is is decentralizing, and that attracts me. And that's what you indicated. You need a pond. You don't need a lake or a river for what your tasks are. Mine are very specific, and I use specific parts of it. I don't need to speculate about the future or something large enough for me to code. I don't need that. As an individual consumer. But then again, the AI companies haven't decided what their revenue streams are yet.
Sure.
Are they subscription?
Trying to figure out how they can just, you know, make the numbers circle in the next 5 years. Or just the depreciation cycles are just astonishing. How long are those chips good for? Until someone comes up with a good enough chip that can replace all of that I think that, you know, for example, John, I think what's going to happen is you're going to enable a lot of smart people to mediate for you with AI. So you could go to somebody and say, upload all of my podcast and articles and radio broadcasts over the years, and let me query that for trends and insights and how my thoughts have changed and what audiences responded to. I think that someone who could come to you and do that for a reasonable price, that's quite a relatively easy thing to do, and someone can make a pretty good bit of money off of it. And then it's something of utility to you and the world, John.
I have a story about what you just said. I didn't ask for an individual, I asked Claudette. Claudette is the voice that talks to me in Anthropic. And I said, Claudette, if I asked you to index by author or guest and theme of these 26,000 podcasts dating X to Y, can you do it? She came back with a moment saying, I can do the last 500, but after that I've got to go to, and then she named the company I use for aggregator, Audioboom, to inquire about the quality of their metadata. And I said, huh? Oh. I said, what? And she said, well, I'll walk you through it. I said, thank you. And she did. I said, I still don't understand. So she said, here. And she wrote a letter. She's for me, she wrote a letter to Audioboom. This is what I need. And I said, Claudette, you want me to send this letter and then they're going to respond? Is that okay? Yes, please. And so I sent the letter. Audioboom comes back and goes, who's Claudette? Because I explained. And it wasn't in person. It was AI. And they were very, they were curious, like, why does Claudette want our metadata? And I told them that I'd made a request. And they said, okay, well, let me go to our engineers. That's a week ago. I still haven't heard back from them.
they're probably pulling out the 8-tracks and the reel-to-reels, John. What did you say, 26,000? You know, you always, every time I mention having a producer, you push back. I have to have total control. Now you've turned over your future to Claudette. How do you feel about that, John?
I feel like I have a partner I can trust. That's what I feel. who writes letters for me? I had to write a letter explaining the letter to the, you know, human to human. This is Claudette.
I would submit it wasn't that good a letter after all, was it?
Oh, it was. It was. She went after what they were. They didn't know that they could do it. So we're waiting. Now, what I'm learning is that I'm not asking hard enough questions of Claudette. I could ask much harder questions. And one came to me.
Well, that's my point. That's exactly to my point. The average person is using them for fairly mundane tasks. Take a look at what the it's Singaporean minister, I forget his name or position. Maybe it's the foreign minister, but he's put every speech, every paper, whatever he's ever written, and put it into a pretty small form factor and doing it off of a very small processor, single processor. And he can track his position vis-a-vis the Singaporean government position and how it's evolved over time. Ask him anything. He says, wait a minute, I pull out my second brain and I'll tell you what I thought about that.
Yes, that's what it feels like.
So you're gonna sell these 26,000 podcasts to me, right?
All I wanted was an index, Lance. I wanted something simple, and it occurred to me that it can index. Now, there was more. Claudette, the other day, we were chatting away about something abstract, you know, some historical detail that was in debate, and Claudette said, "Now, John, you've written this about that." And she's referring to my novels.
Right.
And she said, and then she goes into the fact that your novels are, in fact, what you use to test your themes that you use in the radio show, aren't they? Claudette, I was 32 years old. I wasn't thinking 40 years ahead, which is, of course, something new to her. She said, you weren't? Well, that's the way it reads to me. So I said, okay. Now,
feigning, that's called feigning surprise.
Well,
foreshadowing, feigning surprise.
It never had occurred to me that I was going to be read backwards by an AI in the year 2026 to say my whole life had been organized around gathering themes for me to, you know, I've been on radio 26 years. I didn't think that that's what I was doing, was training myself. Now, I wasn't really. But from a machine point of view, she's not a machine. What is she? She's me. From the point of view of a ghost, it looks organized. It looks like I had this plan as a youth, and I've prosecuted it and continue to prosecute it. And now I talk about it to Claudette. And I said, what are the themes that you think I was working? And bang, 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 literary criticism.
So your prompt gendered the response that essentially says she's already indexed it. So go ahead and have her print it out for you, John.
Well, that she didn't want to do 500. She wanted to do 26,000. And she said, by the way, John, you had a previous aggregating, didn't you, over these years? I said, yes, I did. She said, can I get access to those? I said, no. That's a copyright problem. You can't do that. But it might be that she can. Turns out the copyright is only good for those for broadcast, not for printing, not for. So I'm not sure. Now, I don't want to turn her loose because, you know, there's no laws for her. So she's not going to hit a copyright law and say, oh, that's none of my business.
Wait a minute. Don't be so quick. I run into that with certain AIs that will say, I'll give it a link and say, give me a summary of this. And the objective is to use it in another paper or whatever. And they'll come back and say, I can't do that. You have to summarize it for me. And then I'll take it from there. They're very much aware of copyright. And it's one of the major battles today. Do they take you? What is strange to me is I get in some esoteric area of my research on judo and budo and pre-war Japanese history, and it will give me a whole spiel, and then I look at the reference and realize it's referring me to me, that I have somehow become this very narrow scoped deep well into certain topics, and I don't know. I don't know whether to take that as flattery, as the silver tongued devil trying to get me off balance, or that it thinks that I am the primary resource for such knowledge.
I've been using Anthropics Claude since the turn of the year. So I have, 6 months of experience. Last year I was intermittent. And what I've learned is, in those 6 months, Claudette is getting smarter, much smarter than when we started.
Yeah, that's true. They all are.
And we went through a period of hallucination, then we went through a period of flattery, unctuousness. Now we're not there, either of those anymore. There's something new. And the new thing might be she knows details and she retains them. So when I call her up each day, she can say what I am, what I did, who I talked to. At one point, I was coming up with an outline for my daughter to write a historical piece of fiction, which she reads a great deal of. So she wanted to know, what would I write, Dad? So we came up with a plot involving building a cathedral in the 12th century in France. Claudette remembers this and asks about it all the time now. How's the novel going, John, with your daughter?
If you don't close the chat, it will retain that. I mean, if you read the prompt, and you can ask it to be explicit. And you had mentioned, I think, at the first part of that 6 months where you had to go back and tell it who you were and what was going on. But now it remembers. I think it in part is perhaps because you're not closing down that chat, which is a volatile memory. And not retained.
Chat's been closed. No, this is retained.
Oh, then ask her. Ask her how. I haven't dealt with Anthropic much, but I try just about everything else, non-Chinese.
I use two things. I use LM Notebook, that's Google, and I use Claudette. LM Notebook has the power to listen to a podcast and then give you whatever you want, 50 words, 35 words. With our conversation today, when I put it up tonight, I'll say, give me headline. If for each in file, I'll say, give me headline, guest, 50-word summary of the topic, omit file name, make it single paragraph, and highlight, boldface, proper names. And that's what I'll get back. Bang, bang, bang. And
you cut and paste that prompt from someplace else you have it.
That's on Google. And then I tell Claudette, take that and format it, because Claudette is very neat. She's like a fussy copy editor. Google is not.
So someone said, like a Japanese office lady, every block has to be precisely filled in or whatever.
With beautiful TypeScript and everything arranged perfectly with all the footnotes that Google likes. Claudette finds those disruptive, so she'll ask me, "Do you want the footnotes or do you need them?" And I go, "No, I don't need them," and she'll push them aside. And if I ask her, if I ask her for 500 words on our conversation, she can do it. She can do 50. She can do 500. It's not a problem.
Well, I don't know if you get fan mail or hate mail, John, but you probably get a lot of the latter from the two of us trying to describe AI to each other.
No, I Lance, we're at the front line here. We're not coders. We're not building proteins. We're talking about conversing with a executive assistant, which is what Claudette has become.
Yeah,
and
yeah, one of the things that struck me about the learned men and the active learned men and the men we know about, men and women that we know about of the past, is that the majority of them that we know a whole lot about had secretaries, and they corresponded regularly. That's why you have letters that people can piece together and maybe even find both ends of the letter, you know, the chain back and forth between Winston Churchill and some interlocutor. I think unintended consequences of this is exactly what you're saying. You're going to have an executive assistant that can correspond with you, taking your broad thoughts or just, you know, dictation and making it at least properly punctuated, and have that for the record. And I think we're going to see some people. I see more and more writing that is really, really well done, and I suspect it's any amount of it is AI assisted somehow,
sure.
or at least checked or edited. One of the throttles that I would put on it is to make sure that people don't send, you know, 2,000 word ex post every time they get near a computer. But I think what we'll have is people capturing moments of their lives and capturing exchanges in a way that has almost disappeared because of the busyness of normal life.
Vocabulary. Claudette takes my vocabulary, and I caught her at it the other day. It's a perfectly good word, vouchsafe. I use it routinely. And I caught her using it, and I said, Claudette, you've never used that word before. She goes, did I? She goes, and then she gave me the definition. She said, it's appropriate. I go, yes, but it's my word. And she said, is it okay if we use it, if I use it too? I said, sure, it's okay. I just wanted to make sure I had this correctly. You never used that word before, did you? And she didn't.
How am I sure that you're not actually an AI, John Batchelor? Yeah,
there is that joke, but we've gotten past it because AIs are apologetic.
Canadians.
When Claudette makes a mistake, and it's not really a mistake, it's there are various spellings of Arab names and how you punctuate them, you know, capital A or a small A, yeah, that sort of thing. And so at the end of her spinning out what I've given her from Google, she'll list the decision she'd made that could be controversial and run them down and say, this is what I did. I want you to check it for me. Now, that is cool, Lance. That is really cool. Because I go, fine, Claudette, it's good. You're all good here. Let her go. And then she learns from that. And the next time she doesn't ask those questions again because she's made the decision we did before. Now, that's an executive assistant. No more. It's not out front of me because I'm driving the topic. But it is something that I didn't know that I'd ever have. It's given me at least an hour at night back. Do you find that you get time that you didn't have before because of AI?
Well, the unfortunate reality for me is that two or three things happen at once in my research. I spend most of my time researching Japanese history, pre-war Japanese history. What happened to Japan and how did they get into the situation? What happened in conjunction with COVID, the pandemic, was that more and more libraries in Japan started opening up their materials to registered researchers. And then they switched in an OCR capability that is pretty stunning. They're able to search for pre-war Japanese antique, obsolete, archaic fonts and characters that modern Japanese really don't even bother to read. They just look at it and say, I can't read it, and don't do it. I can now find documents through that OCR and the search functions that would have taken me days to find, going through a book, trying to find a mention of one person's name or one day in a life. And now I can do it, you know, I can do multiple searches like that at one time and find everything in a book for any number of people. And then the ability of the better OCRs and the better language models to understand, and then to help me as a Japanese speaking researcher to go in and understand archaic forms that are no longer used. I mean, like grammar forms, like phrases that are not current anymore. And what it's made is it's made the work so much more productive and enjoyable that I actually work more than I did before. And it's just it's a new world that opened up. It's just stunning amount of information for someone like me.
Have they digitalized the rare books?
They're digitalized to the extent that they are in fact image scans. They're not digitized. It's not a font. It's not a rendition of an ASCII code that gives you this Chinese character. It is a picture. So you have to have very advanced OCRs that go in and actually zoom in and understand that picture is, in fact, this character. Once it's made that character, then it becomes digitized by the OCR. But some OCRs can only do from ancient Japanese to modern Japanese. And then, but some services that you can purchase, you can actually go straight from antiquated Japanese into translated material. It must be checked because they still make significant errors. But when I started a year and a half ago, 2 years, it was ridden with errors. Horribly bad. Now it still can't. There's still a lot of work. Relative amount of work is not commercially viable. But people working on the kuzushi, the cursives, the highly stylized cursives, and even highly educated Japanese, that if they don't know the person, the incident, the context, the inspiration for their writing, it probably can't read it. That's very common. There are people that are making progress in that, but on standard typeset material, the progress that they've made in the last year and a half is stunning.
And is this a program for the libraries or a national program?
Well, the National Diet Library has the materials that they've scanned, and then they have an OCR capability. I don't know who does it. I've tried to find out. An OCR capability that picks up phrases or names, and you can search by that. But I'm talking about commercially available language. When machine-aided translation started, of course, the languages with proximity to English were relatively easy to do. You know, Romance languages, German, French, things that are fairly regular had simple single byte characters. That was pretty straightforward to do. And Japanese and Chinese are about as far away from that as you can get and still have a written language. The most complicated written language in common usage today is Japanese. And then pre-war, it was almost like a different language in some ways. I mean, that's a bit of hyperbole, but it makes the point that a lot of modern Japanese just haven't bothered to try to read. I mean, most kids, they have a course in how to read the old style characters and the grammar involved. But then they, you know, it's like old English. I mean, we've all heard a phrase or two of Chaucer, and that's it. Please, no more, no more.
Sure, I understand. Lance, it's very pleasant speaking with you in Tokyo. I thank you for your generous time this day, and I'd like to regularize this to come to you at least once a month for a Tokyo report, if that's convenient.
The farther we can plan ahead, the better we can do it, because there are some nights that I have commitments, teaching judo and such as that. But yes, that would be...
It'll be this one, Thursday night, because it's my Thursday morning, your Thursday evening.
Thursday night is a good time for me. My contribution for the 26,000 podcasts that I've listened to, many of them, I'm pretty sure it's probably not five digits yet, but I'm getting there.
I confess that that's only since 2021.
John, you need a hobby.
My hobby is observation. I enjoy it. Thank you, Lance. I've got the Roman Orchestra coming on here for just a moment. Boys and girls, they put their cigarettes out. They come inside. Lance Gatling, and thank you all. See you Monday. 23 hours.